Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this media conference. The theme for the day may well be the one you've all been waiting for, the bishop and human sexuality. We will try to give you maximum time for questions today. I've asked our guests today to limit their introductory remarks to just 3 minutes each so that there's maximum time for you to ask your questions. I do want to say from the outset, just by way of introduction, we have Archbishop Ian Earnest with us. Ian is the Bishop of Mauritius and the Archbishop of the Indian Ocean. He is also an active participant in the Global South Network, and he is the current chair of CAPA, the Council of Anglican Provinces in Africa. I would ask you to be aware that English is not Ian's first language. He's agreed to speak in English this morning because we don't have translation facilities. But if you find him resorting to French to get across some of the nuances, don't be surprised. No, he's going to speak in English, but I just ask you to be sensitive to that. This is a sensitive area where nuances of language need to be treated carefully, so just be aware of that. Our other guest is Bishop Colin Johnson, the Bishop of Toronto in Canada. We have a spouse with us today, Jackie Cray, the Reverend Jackie Cray. We have an ordained spouse married to a bishop. And we've thought today again so that you get maximum access on an issue we know you're interested in. We'll ask Jackie to speak at the end. Please give her some respect and don't all leave after the sexuality bit is finished. The bishops do need to be back up the other end of the campus at 2 o'clock, so we will leave at 2:55 and we'll then leave you some time with Jackie to speak about what the spouses have been doing. If I might just say, make an observation about my own Indaba group this morning. You won't be surprised to hear that we haven't suddenly reached consensus about the issues of human sexuality. The problems are not all solved. But there is a significant difference in my view and with the few bishops I've spoken to since the Indaba group this morning, and that is the kind of tone of engagement that's gone on. 10 years ago, people were distressed at some of the reactions to some of the things that were said in the Lambeth Conference 1998. There were occasions when bishops actually booed and hissed what other bishops said in the gathering. 2008 is dramatically different. In my Indaba group this morning, the same degree of difference was very evident in the views held by the bishops, but at the end of the Indaba group, bishops from opposite ends of the spectrum on these issues actually embraced each other and thanked each other for helping them understand better what was at stake in these issues. Now, we haven't waved a magic wand and got answers, as I say, but I think that's a very significant step forward, whether it's borne out by the experience of my brothers, we're about to hear. So with those few words, Ian, I invite you to come and say what you'd like to say.
Good afternoon. We've been given a process that enables each of us bishops here at the conference to have a voice. I remember that at the opening session, I did it in French, and I invited all the bishops to really be a voice in that conference, and the process that has been offered to us by the Archbishop of Canterbury gives us that ability. And today, with this issue that captures our interest, I have to say that we've been able, from either ends of the spectrum, to do it. My experience a few minutes ago has just been exciting and challenging. I myself, with other bishops from the Global South, we have expressed our convictions clearly, but with generosity, but with respect to the other. And we have listened carefully, attentively, to the challenges of our bishops living in other contexts. And I remember that after I've spoken this morning with passion about my own convictions, a bishop from Tech stood up, spoke about his own context, and then we held hands together and said, we've got to journey together. We've got to be able to take the tools that the Lambeth Conference is offering to us through the principle of covenant, through the Windsor continuation process. The conversation cannot stop on Monday. It's got to continue. But then we have widened the spectrum of the debate this morning. We have just not limited ourselves or focused only on homosexuality. We have also touched on the problem of polygamy. We have asked ourselves about a church in my own country, for example. We've got intense sexual activity amongst our young adolescents, and we've said to ourselves, we've got to address these issues. So the whole scope of human sexuality has got to be enlarged. So this journey seems interesting. We've got to be able to act with generosity. I remember that in my own Indaba and Bible study group this morning, Bishop was sharing with us a story of he was rejected in his own Bible study group 10 years ago. People were telling him that he had to go away because he belonged to a certain group. But today, in the process that has been given to us, we are able to look at one another. We are able to shed tears with one another. But at the same time, knowing that we've got different ways and different convictions about what the Word of God is offering to us, but the Anglican Communion, I am proud to belong to it, gives us an opportunity to take out under the table what is an issue for all the world, and we are able to engage with it. So even with my own African colleagues, because I am the chairman of Kappa, I have engaged with them, conversations, we are listening to one another, and we are bringing these conversations to the reflections. And I hope that by the end, this Lambeth Conference will be able to give us opportunities for growth, opportunities for witness of the love of God as given to us on the cross. Thank you.
Good afternoon. We have had in my Indaba group, we've had the opportunity to discuss the issues of sexuality for 2 days because we, having some ownership of our own process, changed some things. I want to give you a number of images. Indaba is about conversation, and conversation is about turning towards another. You only have conversations when you turn towards another. And conversation is related to conversion, but the purpose of conversation is not to convert the other person to my point of view or me to convert the other person to me to be converted to the other person's point of view. It's to turn together, to listen together, and to be changed, both of us, in that process. And that is exactly what is happening because the third party to the process is the living God, the Holy Spirit. And listening to one another into the Holy Spirit, we have an encounter which allows us to be transformed, because you can never come into the presence of the living God without being transformed. We spoke in small groups that were cross-province, and we spoke in the whole group together. The conversation was characterized by respect, mutual generosity, trust, because we felt in the conversations that we've had so far that we are engaged in a common mission, and the common mission is more important than the things that separate us. Things do continue to separate us, but the common mission is about the Millennium Development Goals and their impact on the life of our people. And two images, one from an Aboriginal context where they meet together, stay outside the house, and they do what is called stirring up the dust. They sit in the ground outside, stir up the dust settles, and they go into the house. That very much characterized our Indaba group. The second image is the image of household. Ecumenical, economy, ecology, all come from the same root, about household. And the image that was presented to us today was that the household is more than just a bedroom. The house has a number of other rooms, and outside the house you have land that is flooded or parched, land that is producing food and land that is not. So we set our whole conversation in the context of the wider discussion, not just of human sexuality, not just of homosexuality, but how do we live faithful lives proclaiming the mission of Jesus Christ. The question that we dealt with was, what do I need as a bishop from you, my brothers and sisters, to fulfill the mission that I am called to and that we are called to in our own context? So we spoke very personally, and the conversation will continue because we have four more Indaba group meetings, and we are all coming to it.
Okay, some questions. And I mustn't go just to the front row immediately. I'm going to have to. Oh, there's one in the back, yes.
Have any bishops changed...
Who you are and where you're from?
Christopher Lando from the BBC World Service. Have any bishops changed their mind as a result of the discussions this morning? And how undermined have the discussions been by the absence of so many conservative bishops?
I'll have a go at that, I think. I'm not aware of any bishops who have changed their minds. I am aware of bishops who have thanked bishops who take a different view for helping them understand the issues better and understand what's at stake better. I think the perception is pretty widely shared that the whole conference is the poorer because some bishops have chosen not to attend, and those bishops themselves are poorer because they're not here to engage with their brothers and sisters. Do you want to add anything, Colin?
I would concur with that. I think probably some people have nuanced their position, whether they changed their mind, but we didn't take a vote at the end of it.
Ian?
No, we didn't have anyone who has changed his mind. But I have to say, as chairman of CAPA, that we are going to be the bridge. We regret the absence of our brothers. They have expressed themselves, but we are going to be the bridge here.
Thank you.
Could I add a thing? The conservative voice is not absent from here. Conservative voices were very strongly spoken in my Indaba group this morning, as were liberal voices and those who would not identify themselves as either.
I think that's true. I think there are people who take a strong conservative position in all the Indaba groups, and that interaction is happening. Yeah. Some at the front of the... Yes.
Yes, Tess Hisan from the Anglican Journal. There are criticisms that are nearly discussing where each province is on the issue of homosexuality, that you are, in fact, sidestepping the issue. Any comment?
Well, again, I'm happy to make a start. Archbishop Rowan has made his view very clear right from the time when he wrote to invite the bishops to come that he didn't believe any useful purpose would be served by trying to revisit Lambeth 110. In his view, that still states the position that is held by the vast majority in the Anglican Communion. But the process that was used last time didn't help the church move forward either, so a very different process is being used this time. And I think what we've described to you already this morning, this afternoon, is illustrative of the degree to which that is working. And where we go from here remains to be seen. We've still got to discuss Windsor and the next steps and so on, and that will occupy the next few days. But there are good signs at this stage, I think, that augur well. Add anything,
yes,
Colin?
So Ian? A process, like I said just earlier, has been offered to us. And we're using this process so that we can express ourselves. We are not stepping aside. We are engaging with it, and I said in mutual respect.
I should have added by way of introduction that Ian has been an active member of the design group for this Lambeth conference too, and I think I'm right in saying chaired some of the meetings of the design group during the illness of Sir Alison Pogo. So Ian is very on top of the process. You want to add anything, Colin?
I would say the conversation continues. I think it would have been unreasonable to expect a full resolution to an issue that is a continuing conversation within the life of our whole world. And the commitment that we continue to make is that we are engaged continuing to engage in Ndaba. The people in my group, while they came with some anxiety about Ndaba, today one expressed that we are now in Ndaba. We are really, truly talking to one another.
Thank you. There's another one here in the front.
Yeah. Yes. Solange DeSantis from Episcopal Life Media. Archbishop Ernest, dear Grace, you said you've engaged with your African colleagues in bringing their voices to the reflections. Mm-hmm. Are you in touch with some of the bishops who are not here while you're here at Lambeth?
The General Secretary of CAPA is here at the moment, and I have not yet engaged myself, but if I feel that I have to listen to my brothers, I will do it. But for the time being, I am myself in conversation with the other bishops that are here.
Thank you. Someone over here. Yeah.
All three of you sound pretty hopeful about this process. So I would ask, I'm Katie Sherritt from Integrity and the Lambeth Witness. My question is, what words of hope do any of you have for gay and lesbian, bisexual and transgender Anglicans who are watching this conference necessarily from afar, and it looks like their relationships, their lives, and their vocations are being used as bargaining chips in these discussions.
Colin?
I would not say that, that they were, simply because I think people, there is a huge amount of respect, and we are talking, our initial conversations, we're talking about how these conversations affect us in our mission in our own context. So people were able to speak out of their own context of the mission of the church, their mission as bishop in various communities. And clearly, some people are in a community where there's great openness about discussion of issues of homosexuality and including dealing with clergy and lay people who are homosexual and in relationship, and they're bringing that into the conversation. It's fully part of the conversation.
And we also take into consideration what Lambeth 110 is telling us about welcoming, loving, and pastorally serving our brothers and sisters.
Thank you. Second row, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. I'm Carol Flanagan from the Diocese of Washington. I'm interested to know whether there is an expectation that the work of the bishops at this time is going to influence the continuation of the Windsor process and what that might look like, or are they just happening separate from each other?
I might just make a comment. No, they are being woven together now and over the next few days. The Ndaba sessions have not been purely about content, the issues of the day, in isolation from how we might move forward as a communion. So some of that ground has been chewed over in the Ndaba groups. A special self-select session has been put on in the program this afternoon because a number of ideas have been bubbling up around the conference about ways forward. So the design group has asked Bishop Clive Hanford to chair a self-select session to try and get those ideas fleshed out and on the table so that they can be fed into Ndaba groups on Saturday for consideration by the Ndaba groups. So that process, you know, it has its wrinkles, but it's working reasonably well, I think. Do you want to add anything, Colin?
I would say that it's part of the conversation of our Ndaba group.
Yes, Leanne? So this is the same thing.
Thank you.
Yeah, down at the back. Yeah, with the camera. Yeah.
Cynthia Black, Claiming the Blessing Media. This process seems to be well designed to include all the voices of the bishops that are here. I'm wondering if you can tell me when the voices of the faithful LGBT Anglicans will be able to be heard.
Yeah. Thank you.
We are not talking on of our own. We are the representatives of the faithful. Which we represent here. We are their voices.
You want to add anything, Colin?
I come from a community that is as diverse as it could possibly be. And I hope I'm not speaking only for one body, but for a range of people within the context of my diocese. We have a diocese that is hugely multicultural, has a very large gay, lesbian, transgendered, bisexual population. So I'm speaking that into the sessions. And I'm also representing the fact that our diocese has a large, very conservative body too. So we are, it's not one side versus another side in a debate that is polarized. It is trying to hold various paradoxes in appropriate tension.
Yes, sir. John Burns, New York Times. I may have misunderstood, but my impression from Bishop of Mauritius and Bishop of Toronto is that at the least you would neither of you be classed as being in the conservative camp on this issue. And so my question goes to Archbishop Aspinall, and that is, if at a briefing for the press like this, you do not have present somebody who speaks clearly for the conservative camp, then does that represent in some way how little progress there is and how threatening the schism remains?
I reject your premise entirely. Archbishop Ian is squarely planted in the conservative camp, an active member of the Global South, the chairman of CAPA, well-known conservative views about these issues.
George Congregate Church of England newspaper, Archbishop Ian. What has the GAFCON movement done to the unity of CAPA? Do you see the Jerusalem Declaration being of any significance in this gathering? What are your views on the whole GAFCON movement?
Actually, I have invited my brother primates to attend a primates meeting of CAPA on the 2nd and 3rd of September in Kenya. And on the agenda, we put the GAFCON and the Lambeth Conference, what has happened and what they bring to us. And from there, we are going to move forward. So, and the General Secretary of CAPA, Canon Grace Queso, has attended the Jerusalem Conference. So CAPA has been present.
Sir. Yes, Carol Lewis, Church Public in New York. After the Archbishop's presidential address, a lot of bishops felt that a diminution of the status of either the U.S. or Canada might be an eventual consequence of the deliberation. Do you think that the encouraging tone of the Indaba group might lead towards an avoidance of that eventuality?
Within our Indaba group, we've not reached consent. It's not at this point. We've not reached consensus. There are some very strong voices that would favor that, and there are other equally strong voices, interestingly, from beyond the Canada and the United States, that would be very upset at covenant that was two-tiered. And that both of those positions were expressed quite forcefully today. That's all I said.
You want to add anything, Ian? Covenant is really coming into view tomorrow. We've got time for probably maybe two more. Ruth?
Archbishop Ian, in tomorrow's Times, Henry Arombi has written a comment piece in which he accuses the Archbishop of Canterbury of betrayal and says that he represents a remnant of Britain's colonial past, which is not doing justice to a modern Anglican communion. I was very interested in what you said about providing a bridge from here in your Indaba groups to the Global South. And I wonder if, in the light of Henry Romney's comments, and considering whether there still might or might not be schism, you could explain more about that bridge and whether you think schism is avoidable.
As you know, some of my brothers haven't attended, but we are the bridge so that we can bring their voices here. I want to answer to my brother here. The conservative voice is very much here. And we have responded to the invitation of the Archbishop of Canterbury and to engage ourselves with the Windsor continuation process, to engage ourselves with the principle of covenant so that we can make this communion be a true witness of God's love. But definitely, I have to say it again. I am someone whose life is based on the scriptures, and I'm going to defend it, but I'm going to defend it with love and respect.
Last one, someone who hasn't asked. Yes, sir.
Andrew Carey, Judge of England newspaper, we're hearing a lot about process during the Lambeth Conference, and it's all very nice hearing about how well you're getting on in Indaba, but it looks like navel-gazing to a lot of people outside. Are you actually going to say anything to the outside world about human sexuality?
Let me say, from my point of view, it doesn't feel like navel-gazing from the inside. It feels like significant steps are being taken in relationships between the bishops, and growth in understanding is occurring. Ask the bishops about that around the campus. I mean, the signs I've seen are that bishops are moving. We might not have reached consensus. In fact, we certainly haven't reached consensus. But I believe people are feeling that significant growth is occurring. Colin?
Where consensus has critically gathered is in terms of around the environment, ecology, and Millennium Development Goals. And there is some very strongly expressed opinion within my Indaba group that the media concentration on sexuality has diminished the possibility of actually engaging in some of the really critical additional issues in our world, which are Millennium Development Goals.
Ian, you happy? Okay, it's after 2:05. We need to go, but I'll ask Jackie to come forward and speak to you for a few minutes about the Spouses Program. And you will get, as you leave today, draft 3 of the reflections document, which has been produced overnight. It's gone from 13 pages to 18 pages, and a lot more work is still going on around that. So get that as you go. Thank you, bishops. Thank you.
As Archbishop Philip mentioned at the beginning, the representative from the Spouse Program today is a rather unique person in a unique position. The Reverend Jackie Cray is a vicar in her own right, but also married to the wife, or is the wife of the Bishop of Maidstone. So that's a neat place to be.
We started our Spouses Conference 14 days ago telling our stories to one another, and we progressed to looking at our married life, our individual vocations and callings, both as men and women, because, of course, we have male spouses in our programme. And then we had this very moving time when we looked at abuse of power together with the bishops, and it seemed entirely appropriate to us that our next topic as spouses was caring for God's people, their spiritual and physical health, their health and their well-being. Tertullian, one of the early church fathers, said, "See how these Christians love one another. And caring for one another in the body of Christ has always been one of the key characteristics of the church. It begins with caring for one another, but of course doesn't end there, because another of the characteristics of the early church and of the church today is that care is shown to the local community." My own experience of this was having a family member who was very sick, one of our children, and just to experience the community life of the church during what was quite a long journey of illness, where people not only prayed for me, but practically supported me, brought me meals, helped me, cared about my well-being as a mother and us as a family unit, as well as about the health and well-being of that child. The good news is that she's now a social worker. So from somebody who wasn't thriving, she's somebody who thrived. But actually, I believe she thrived because of the love of a community that respected her and loved her as a person in her own right. She grew up with no sense of knowing that she was any different to any other child or any other human being. And in caring for one another, I believe that's a unique contribution that the Christian church brings, that respect and that love for one another. And no matter how poor our material resources are, whether we come from Burundi or whether we come from Tanzania or whether we come from Mozambique or whether we come from Europe or England, what we do have is the fathomless resource in Jesus Christ, our prayers, our love, and our practical support for one another. Our scene was set by another unique lady who is a bishop's wife and also a doctor. Well, she's more than a bishop's wife. She's married to the Bishop of Accra, who is the primate of West Africa. Maria Akrofi calls herself a global citizen, a wife in two cities, because she also practices in Liverpool as well as in Ghana and across West Africa through the Ministry of the Mercy Ships. And Maria, with great humour and warmth, describe what it meant to having a medical perspective on the health and well-being of spouses of bishops, as well as caring for people in their own community and the clergy in their own diocese. And Maria has a particular concern for the personal development of spouses, training development in her country, as well as for their health and well-being. She's a great person of prayer, of spiritual insight, and a lot of medical experience. And we enjoyed Maria sharing with us enormously. Our second speaker was Professor John Copeland, President of the World Federation of Mental Health and Professor Emeritus Professor of Psychiatry at the University of Liverpool. He has collaborated widely in Europe, Asia, and Africa about mental health in general, about mental health following disasters. And he made, an important point that a lot of money from our NGOs goes into practical support for countries after disaster, but almost no money is set aside for the provision of mental health resources for those who suffer with mental health difficulties following disaster situations. I think a lot of our spouses could relate to what he was speaking about. So two speakers with slightly different perspectives. Professor Copeland doesn't necessarily come with a Christian perspective, but a worldwide perspective and experience on mental health that our spouses found incredibly helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, a couple of questions, please sit down. And George, we'll start with you.
George Conger, Church of England newspaper. You spoke of the abuse of power as one of the topics that heard the spouses heard. I want to take that theme and address an issue that's been raised indirectly, and that has been accusations of wife beating among the bishops. It's been written about in the secular press, in the Lambeth Journal. We had a suffering bishop of New York talk about wife beating bishops. What's this all about? Is this
I can only comment from a personal perspective. I've heard nothing of that nature, and that was not what we focused on as a spouses conference. I can tell you that my husband doesn't beat me, that he's my best friend. He is my bishop, but he's not the bishop that I relate to as a priest in the diocese. That happens to be the Bishop of Dover, so that we keep our boundaries absolutely clear. But he is the person of greatest wisdom in my life. So I'm sorry, I can't really answer that with any credibility.
Thank you. I think it's important to keep the questions related to what Jill has spoken about in the spouses program in general, rather than venturing off into some other areas. Please.
I wanted to ask about a rumor that was running around yesterday that some of the bishops left the discussion.
We're not going to get into that. This is a spouse and from the spouses program, and I think those kinds of questions need to be directed either to Philip or in the press briefing. Okay. Any other questions?
But if you've got questions about caring for God's people's spiritual and physical health, which is what the session was about, I'd be delighted to
Thank
answer
you.
Them.
Mary Frances?
Mary Frances Schomburg from Episcopal News Service. Let's see if this fits. did the topic of how gay and lesbian Christians or gay lesbian persons in general in your diocese are cared for mm-hmm. enter into those discussions today or at any other mm-hmm. time during your spouse's time together?
They didn't directly in terms of the input, but we always give in our spouses program considerable time for talking around the table very honestly about issues. We also ended our time today with an opportunity for prayer and anointing with oil for people that had struggled with issues, who needed physical healing, whether they needed encouragement or strengthening. So I can't answer that because I wasn't around in those table discussions.
Great.
In getting great condition of new service, the subject today on mental well-being, mental health, linking in with the abuse of power, the victims of sexual violence, domestic violence, often have long-lasting mental health issues as a consequence of their experiences. Did anything come out from the day yesterday or on the abuse of power issue which, about how the church can actually respond positively to the needs of victims?
I can only answer questions about today. And certainly one of the things that Professor Copeland talked about in terms of caring for people's mental well-being is that the environment as well as, you know, the things, if you like, in our physical and emotional bodies all need to be taken into consideration. And therefore, one of the unique ways that the Christian Church and the Christian Church's community can be supportive is providing that safe place where both disclosure can happen. Because one of the things that he talked about was the awful stigma across, and just about everybody in the room agreed with this, and all the countries represented, there is still an awful stigma about mental illness across all of the countries that we represent. And therefore, the church being a safe place where both that can be disclosed, but where it can be helped and walked alongside as well.